You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you're walking with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. You can call me at 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. You can also email me at dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. Check out all the archives, breadboxmedia.podbean.com. And you can also become friend of the show by logging on to breadboxmedia.com. Going over to the side, finding Dr. Michelle Live, and boom, click, and you become friend of the show. Today's Ash Wednesday, so can I say happy Ash Wednesday? I don't know if it is. It is happy, and it's happy because it's happy in its somber recognition of from dust we came, to dust we will return. Our bodies, our human life. We also know it's the beginning of the acknowledgement and recognition that there is something else to the story. And the something else to the story is resurrection, is life. Life continue even after the body. This is a really important thing for us to kind of get our little minds around. And I don't mean that is a pejorative here to get our little minds around, because really our minds are very, we are a dichotomy. We're both and. We keep going on. We keep trudging on. We find these amazing things, and our brains can do things that just blow me away all the time. As we look and we think and we figure, and that's part of a whole plan. It's part of our discovery. We are an untapped universe. You are an untapped universe. This is why it's so important to get to that loving yourself. How do you love yourself? Yesterday was how do you love yourself in the face of rejection? We're going to revisit that just a little bit, because the answer really comes down to how do you love yourself, period. But oftentimes we of the human physical world have certain things in common when it comes to these triggers and being rejected or being ripped off or being harmed in some way, or even sometimes being sick sometimes brings up these triggers. And everything comes falling in on you. Everything comes just tumbling in on why you feel so bad. It is about the rejection, but the rejection then all of a sudden it's like a little earthquake coming up. Stuff from underneath the ground starts revealing itself, or let's say a mountain coming through that you think everything's just, you know, you don't even think. You just keep going on in life. Something occurs in your life, and then all of a sudden, it's not just dealing with the fact that there was a rejection. It's also dealing with the fact that all of a sudden you hate yourself. You beat yourself up. You self-deprecate, or you self-harm, or you allow yourself to be buried or hide or go into addictions. And so on this Ash Wednesday, where we are reminded that we have these bodies, these corporal vessels, and we are vessels, and we house a spirit. We house the Holy Spirit. We're vessels for a Holy Spirit. That's pretty amazing stuff. You're a vessel. It's so super. It's so sci-fi and so supernatural. But it is. And those of you who have had the experience of seeing someone in a funeral home, paying your last respects, someone who's been embalmed, or someone who has been through medical school and you dissected a cadaver, or you've watched someone die right there and you see what happens. You realize there's something, especially the first time you see it happen. I remember the first time I had an experience with death. Well, I had a couple of them. One of them, I accidentally stepped on a frog. And that was really shocking to me. I had a little tiny frog in my hand going to school, to my friend's house. We're going to take the bus, second grade. And I found this little tiny frog on the way to her house. And I had it in my hand. I was going to show her. And when I opened up my hand, it jumped out. And I went over to pick it up and I stepped forward and I stepped on it. And there was something in my little second grade mind. I felt so bad, but I also felt, it was like, wait, wow. One minute there's this jumping creature and the next minute it's not there. The next minute it won't go. And then the next one that I had was walking with that same friend, actually, only several years later when I knew we were going to move. We were best friends and my family was going to move and we were just, you know, figuring out how I could live with her or we could run away together or some such thing. But it was several years later and we're walking down the street and this little Cocker Spaniel, cream colored Cocker Spaniel started following us. And we just thought it was so sweet. We didn't understand. I don't think I had a dog in the family at that point, but we were young. And so we're walking, the dog's following us down the street. And then as we're walking, it's behind us and we're, you know, thinking how cute and everything. And then the dog goes off into the street because we heard the car and then the brakes, and the dog was hit. And the dog was just laying there. And that's the first time I ever recall seeing the eyes, seeing breath and life and spunk, and then nothing. Nothing, just boom, gone. Whew. This breath, the spirit, the inspiration of life, gone. And then many years later, personally and professionally, seeing many people die. And it never ceases to be solemn and respectful. And it there's something about it where you really see the form. It's like seeing the Grand Canyon. If you've ever seen the Grand Canyon, the first time I saw the Grand Canyon, I'm looking at it and I'm kind of like squinting my eyes and like shaking my head because it was like I can't grasp the perspective. I couldn't grasp it. It all of a sudden seemed like a painting because it was too vast for my human brain to understand, to grasp the actual physical perspective of it. I can see mountains, I can see ocean, I can see, you know, trees up close, far away, hills, and you get an idea of perspective. But when something is beyond your frame of reference, your brain tries to just work hard to try to get it into some kind of format that you can deal with. And it is humbling and kind of frightening because for you, you also have that understanding of the vastness of you. So we have this odd little paradox of our finite beings, the limitations of our finite bodies, and also this huge unknown, mysterious, and yet intimately known supernatural place, being, heart, whatever it is. So today on Ash Wednesday, it is a wonderful opportunity to begin this, what seems to be a dichotomous journey, but that is the constant reminder every year of this humanity and the depths of the humanity and the awfulness of humanity as we go through the passion, and then also the glorious resurrection that is available to all humanity, everybody, even people you don't like. So, and even people that, that you think there's no way. Is at the very moment, God has no time and you have no idea what transpires between that person and God. So we've got a lot on our plate, but I do want to just start off with honoring the fact that this is Ash Wednesday. It's a very important day and it is solemn and we do need to be reminded. And in doing so, it fits in very nicely with the thought about loving yourself. Because on one hand, you would think it's like, okay, it's a slap down reminder. Like, hey, don't get too lofty because from dust you came and to dust you will return. But in that space between from dust becoming and dust returning, we have a life. And part of that life is to perpetuate love, which is God. So we perpetuate his creation, love's creation. And how do we do that? We do that in many, many, many ways, not just by procreating. We do it in many ways. We do it by first loving your neighbor, well, loving God above all things, loving your neighbor as yourself. And the only way you can do that is to love yourself. So why then do we get so self-defeating and why do we get so angry and so, or sometimes so people-pleasing or why do we shut down and withdraw? Why do we sometimes get violent toward ourselves or maybe someone else or criticize ourselves or just go into our addictions when we're feeling this is not self-love? How does that happen? Why does that happen? How do we counteract that? We're going to get into this and much, much more on the other side of the break. I am your host, Dr. Michelle.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome back. I'm your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are with me today on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. And you can email me, DM live at breadboxmedia.com. Suggestions, concerns, problems, questions, anything at all. All right. On this Ash Wednesday, we're talking about loving yourself in all manners. And interestingly, that when we get rejected, when we lose everything, when our life does not go in the way we thought we had planned, when people hurt us, leave us, die on us, give us up for adoption, whatever happens in your life, there are those of us, those of you, who turn in on themselves. It's a very comfortable place to be. Not that you like it or that you made that up to be comfortable, but for whatever reason, you got to that place where you ingested either your place in the family. We talked a little yesterday about the star child, that even if you're the star child, even if you did everything, you had the best voice, the best math skill, the best in school, the best chess player, the best football player, the best dancer, the prettiest, I don't know what, the prettiest face, the prettiest disposition, whatever that gave you and your parents, they almost wore you like a badge. So you felt like a badge and you felt like you could be tarnished at any second. You couldn't let it dull out Because if you did, they'd throw the badge away. You'd no longer represent them in the world. Happens all the time. And you might be doing it to your own kids right now. And not because you're bad or mean, but because you know no other way. It may be the way you were brought up, and maybe you are very accomplished. But inside is that kernel, that feeling inside of anxiety about people getting to know who you really are and not liking you, or that depression inside you really are worthless, or the emptiness inside that without other people, you will be nothing, or the shame that you're living a lie, or guilt for things that you didn't do. A lot of star children or a lot of non-star, or the opposite of that, the one who's the scapegoat of the family, oftentimes feels like if they just had done better, other things wouldn't happen. People wouldn't die. People wouldn't be in trouble. If you didn't save your brother or sister, if you didn't help save your parent, perhaps you have an alcoholic family where the dad or mom is alcoholic and abusive, whether they drink or not. And then you start resenting because you've given your life over to everyone else and then you don't have a life. Where does that come from? Where does that come from? Well, if you've had trauma, if you've witnessed trauma, and I mean sexual trauma or inappropriate trauma or threatening or violence or intimidation, bullying, if you were from a family who could not attend to you for one reason or another, they were too busy, too working, too pious, always involved in the church, always involved in work, and somehow you were just left to your own devices, or you just didn't feel like what you needed was getting filled. Or if there was sexual abuse, or there was other kinds of physical abuse, or just constant derision and deriding, or verbal abuse, or mental abuse, tricking and pretending. Or perhaps there is that whole idea of pretending. A lot of families say, up. They really caution there, and I understand it. They really caution their families to talk about nothing outside the house. Putting on that good front, that good face. And then you feel like you've got this big old secret that you're holding on to. So you feel kind of angry, guilty, because you can't be you. You can't be real. All those things tend to then allow us to grow in such a way that they become a part of us. So what do we do sometimes to take these things out on ourselves? Well, the most obvious is low self-esteem. We're bad. We're not good enough. We need to do better. We have to drive ourselves. I will be the best. I will be the best. I will be the best. I will be the first. Drive yourself too hard, or don't drive yourself at all. It's the opposite. There's usually the extremes come out. You're either way on one end or way on the other. So you either will really ignore everything in life that you really want in order to succeed, and push and push and push and push, and it's never enough, never enough, never enough, or you'll do nothing, just lay down. Kind of a learned helplessness situation, because nothing you ever do means anything anyway, right? Nothing you ever do was ever good enough. And by this time in your life as an adult or a young adult, just walking into adulthood, you may not be consciously thinking that. You just may be living it. This harsh judgment and this critical self. It's almost like you've been given a bunch of little ethereal, invisible dolls that speak to you and criticize you. Oh, you don't want to do that. You don't want to pick that color. You don't want to put your hair that way. You don't want to say that. People in our family don't say that. Ladies don't say that. Princesses don't say that. You know, it's funny. Speaking of princesses, I had the occasion to see Frozen. And I was really, you know, at first I was like, I mean, it really made me cry. I cried a lot at Frozen, which is, I cry at a lot of things. But I saw Disney's Frozen, and I love Disney. I've gone, you know, I grew up on Disney. I lived in Anaheim as a little kid. But yet there was something I haven't liked about Disney for many, many years. And the huge commercialism, not that it wasn't there before, but this, you know, it's almost like taking over our earth. You can't really go anywhere without something being stamped Disney. And then the idea of the princesses. I was went to a place a couple of years ago when I was up in Los Angeles that, it was a shopping area that's a Disney thing. I was going with a couple of young mothers, and we went to the princess store, and it was unbelievable. I mean, we're talking $70, $100 for a little princess dress, and then you got to get the shoes and the little tiara and the wand and everything else. And I was really not very happy with that. And then the other thing is I love Disney. I love their cartoons. I love their movies. And yet, really, when I look at it, it's all the same thing. The girl waits for the guy. The girl has a journey to go through. But the quest at the end of that isn't righteousness or self-discovery. It is she gets the guy. She gets the prince. And I had an interesting turn of events happen. Is when I returned, I've told you all that I do volunteer for the homeless. And one of the people that I kind of keep tabs on, he's blind, and he has my phone number. And so every once in a while, when he's really out there, he'll call. Never asked me for anything ever, but he'll call just to kind of have someone kind of calm him down. And so he was talking, and he said, you know, when you're young, you see all these Disney movies about the handsome prince riding, you know, riding their steed and finding the princess. And he was going on and on about how awful that was and how the life isn't like that. And I never thought of it from the male point of view, ever. I never thought about that concept of what we see, what we see in front of us as from the male point of view. And although I love fairy tales, I think fairy tales can do some great things. They can also do some harmful things. They can hold up these impossible stereotypes that can be harmful. So I'm watching Frozen, and Frozen was awesome. I was watching it with my granddaughter. Just completely awesome, because at first I'm thinking she falls in love with this guy who's such a narcissist. I mean, it's like, I'm like, oh yeah, I talk to women all the time who are having boyfriends just like that, or husbands just like that. And you can tell they sweep them off their feet, and they woo them, and they say everything, and they look in their eyes, and they're like, you are everything to me, and you are absolutely everything to me. And they turn out to be self-serving. They build them up some way. They either want their castle, or they want what they can give them, what they themselves do not have. And they take it. They will take it to the demise. And so what happened is I don't want to give away Frozen if you haven't seen it, but I'm thinking, wait a minute, this is just a regular Disney thing. I'm not sure I want my little 2-year-old granddaughter to know about this. And yet, as it goes on, the adventures go on, and there's a moment where things get really bad, and she's, you know, kind of wasting away, and she needs true love's kiss. And yet she goes to the guy, and he gives her the kiss, or maybe he refuses to give her the kiss. I don't remember now, but whatever happened, nothing worked. The true love's kiss turned out to be her sister. The true love was the true love between these two sisters. And the beauty in that is very strong, because it shows that it's something authentic, that it's an authentic, it is not believing the flowery lies out there, and always going on to trust in yourself. This was a good message. Well, I am Dr. Michelle. I'll see you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You're walking with me today on Dr. Michelle Live, a glorious, beautiful day everywhere, because it is our day. It sounds very trite. I laughed one time at a little plaque that my now deceased ex and would-be ex, isn't this complicated, mother-in-law had on her wall. It seemed like just a mindless platitude about how we are only one, and I can't even repeat it. It kind of sounds like that when I say it, you know. Well, it's a beautiful day because it is a day. But, you know, it really is when we really think about it, because I'm looking with my eyes and I'm seeing blue, the color blue. I'm seeing white. I'm seeing green. I'm seeing purple. I'm seeing the most different shades of pink. I'm seeing beige. It's so mind-boggling if you actually took a second to capture, like, you are your iPhone camera and you're capturing the little snapshot in front of you. The detail that you're actually putting into your brain is so enormous and mind-boggling. It's unbelievable. So just for a minute, do that. Look out your window. If you're driving, don't do this. But or if you need to take care of your little children, don't do this. But even if you're in your house, wherever you are, If you take a moment and you see what you see and you say, well, what am I looking at? Oh, I'm looking at the morning. I'm looking at some blue sky, looking at a tree, looking at some flowers. But when you really think about it, you're looking at hundreds, if not thousands, if not more than that, shades and colors and prisms of dew on leaves and all the different components that make up a green. And it's not just green, not just green. Now, not all of you may see it the same way, and many of you are colorblind. So I understand that. But yet all the detail is still there. Without even knowing it, your neurons have a snapshot that is forever in your brain of every little ridge that is on a weed leaf. The leaf of a weed may not be regular. Maybe some little insect has eaten part of it. Maybe it has little fuzz on it. Maybe it has thorns. Maybe, you know, whatever. And then you see your brain takes in all the different shapes and colors of the speckled light over some brown dead leaves underneath the foliage. The curling leaves of the lily that I see. And where you are, you may not have that because it's still cold, but you have other things. You have the twigs. I mean, whatever you're looking at, it's almost infinite what your brain has taken in. May not remember it all or even know it, but if you don't take a moment to witness it, and that by witnessing it, you're witnessing the glory of God. You're witnessing how glorious and utterly mind-boggling. We don't think anything of taking an Instagram. We don't think anything of taking a quick, you know, 25 snaps on our iPhone and looking at them and posting them and this and that. But if you really look and think, my gosh, not only did someone think of that and think of the camera way back when, but that's only a little bit of what our brains do continually all day long. And that if we really could be that centered and concentrated, we might see the little ant that we're not paying attention to on one of the leaves that we've seen. But our brains see it. It's just, anyway, I just get so enamored with what goes on in us. It's just, it's a trip. So coming back to the self-esteem, which really does make come back to this, because oftentimes we are so taken up with our own distress and our own distraughtness and our own self-hatred and self-consuming worthlessness that we don't see anything else. Our eyes are cast downward. They're not cast upward. Our eyes are cast downward into ourself, into the dark caverns of ourselves. See, you're so bad. You're so this, you're so that. You're an addict. You'll never be anything but an addict. You can't do this. You're no good. You're stupid. And they come up at the weirdest times. I've had people in their 60s and 70s say that they really never did this before, but then all of a sudden they might lose their keys and go, oh, you stupid. It comes from way back in childhood. And they just start noticing, wow, I do that. So where is the healthy self-esteem along with the humility and the being humble? And that's the difference. It is not arrogance. It is not narcissism to shine and to allow your gifts and your talents and your brain and everything about you to radiate. If you are a model, if you are a mathematician, if you are a mother, if you bake well, if you write well, if you clean well, if you organize well, whatever you do. And you know, we talked about Barbara Corcoran from Shark Tank yesterday. And of all the things, being dyslexic and being told she'd never get anywhere. And her mom had 10 children. But her mother said, it's your imagination. You've got an imagination. All this other stuff doesn't matter. All this other stuff will go away. Grow that imagination. And let that imagination show you the possibilities. What a beautiful thing. If we could be that mother, and if we could all have had that mother in one way or another, what an awesome thing. Would it be great? So on this Ash Wednesday, in our desire to be better and to really understand that we are in these jars of clay, I'm going to read to you 2 Corinthians. This was given to me when I worked in the eating disorder clinic. This was given to me by a patient. Beautiful, beautiful person who was not winning the battle at that moment with the eating disorder. However, eventually did get well enough. But she gave this to me. She gave this to me as a thank you with several other things. But here's one of them. 2 Corinthians, and it's perfect today. I just happened to run across it, and I don't think anything has just happened. This was many years ago. 2 Corinthians 4, chapter 4, verses 7 to 10 and 16 to 18. So here it is. But this precious treasure, this light and power that now shine within us, is held in jars of clay, that is, in our weak bodies, so everyone can see that our glorious power is from God and is not our own. We are pressed on every side by trouble, but we are not crushed and broken. We are perplexed, but we don't give up and quit. We are hunted down, but we get up again and keep going. Through suffering, these bodies of ours constantly share in the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be seen in our bodies. That is why we never give up. Though our bodies are dying, our spirits are being renewed every day. For our present troubles are quite small and won't last very long. Yet they produce for us an immeasurably great glory that will last forever. So we don't look at the troubles we can see right now. Rather, we look forward to what we have not yet seen. For the troubles we see will soon be over, but the joys to come will last forever. Ash Wednesday, yay, Ash Wednesday. She did not give this to me on Ash Wednesday, but this fits for today. Thank you, God, for letting me take a look. I happened to, when I was packing up, because I had to leave a place I didn't want to leave, but I had to leave. So I'm packing up and I happen to come across this. This is from at least 8-9 years ago. And I put it on my refrigerator so I could see these beautiful things in her little letter to me. So doesn't that work today with Ash Wednesdays, our little jars of clay? But we have these jars of clay, weak bodies, so that we can attest to the glory when these clay jars stay behind and the spirit rejoins. As I said in the beginning of the program, the whole thing about death, the whole thing about seeing people die and dogs die and frogs die, as I talked about in the beginning, and we will too. And it's really hard to even think about because it's hard to imagine. But it is there. It is there. And that's why we have our little Ash Wednesday, our big Ash Wednesday. All right. So then I'm also going to go, this segment's going to be, we're running out of time. So let's talk a little bit about Isaiah and things that we usually do for Isaiah 58 about fasting. It's all about fasting. So it says, why should we fast if you never see it? Why do penance if never noticed? Then it says, it is not the sort of fast, the one that everyone sees, that pleases me. It is the Lord Yahweh who speaks to break unjust fetters and undo the thongs of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free and break every yoke, to share your bread with the hungry and shelter the homeless poor, to clothe the man you see to be naked and not turn from your own kin. Then will your light shine like the dawn and your wound be quickly healed over. We'll get to the rest of that on the other side of the break and more. I got some interesting statistics to you about Catholics on the other side of the break. I am your host, Dr. Michelle.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You're with me today, Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. And you can email me, DM live at breadboxmedia.com. So Isaiah 58 is giving us this way of looking at fasting and what can we fast from? Sometimes we don't necessarily have to fast from. We have to fast to, fast actively. It's kind of like the difference between running from and running to. In other words, when you find yourself, let's say, in rejection or in despair or in fear. And as I'm talking, I'm trying to pull my German Shepherd toward me. Here, right here. And these are the things we have to continue on to. Yes, I am. It's kind of like the persistence. God teaches you through your creatures, through the creatures. And I told you, God gave me this dog. And it always makes me laugh. How it happened, why it happened, when it happened. And it's always, the meaning and all the craziness, is always being revealed to me. And part of it is, today for me, I'm taking a little side trip here, is that one thing this teaches me is that some things are now, they are in the now. This is a wonderful creature with a lot of problems who is kind of inching away from where I told him to be. And in order to to continue the relationship and in order to give him the best that he can be, because he is, has enormous potential. He's extremely smart and he loves having a job and he loves being. And he was like, I told you, he was beyond his euthanasia date, actually, when he was rescued by someone else, not me. And yet he is like all of us. It's like, well, she's occupied. I'll just kind of like do a special ops thing here and sneak out, even though she told me to stay. And I can let it go and then backtrack. And it will be a little bit harder because he's just all he's done. It's just like with your kids and like you are with yourself. All you do is you teach yourself, you teach your children, and I would teach my dog right now that this, when I am preoccupied, this is when we let things go, that this is when we are vulnerable. This is when I can just be undisciplined. I can make, do it my way. I can take over. And so I look at that and I'm on the air. But right now, I have to do both. I have to let you into my home and my place where I am and be there with me when I pull my dog back in a way. And I do have to say his command. And now he's sitting or laying there like he's supposed to be, waiting for the next moment when he thinks he can catch me off guard. But don't we do that all the time? We think we learn our lesson and we just, you know, keep falling. St. Paul really knew what he was talking about. So when we're talking about this fasting too, this beautiful Corinthians, we are jars of clay, but we have this amazing opportunity just, and that's the wisdom and the beauty is that we are jars of clay and we house this bright, shining, glorious spirit that is God, that is the witness of God, how he inhabits these jars of clay. Just like you can put smoke in a jar, in a bottle, and you just open the top up and it will just come out and the jars there empty. That's us, basically. And so this fits in with the whole concept of the wounds of childhood that can be revealed and healed through every single moment, every single moment of rejection, every single slap in the face, every single downturn in life, and why we do need to heal our self-esteem, because we will keep our eyes cast downward and we will look for all the answers in all the wrong places. And it'll just keep us in the self-perpetuating mud. And that statement is not for you to beat yourself up with. Because we always go back there. What do they say? The dog going back to its own vomit? As much as I will wash myself off and have a moment, I'll get back down there. I'll get back down the mud and think, oh gosh, you know, if you just were better this or better that, this would have happened, that would have happened. So, all right. So now Isaiah says, if you fast, fasting like yours today will never make your voice heard on high. Is that the sort of fast that pleases me? A truly penitential day for men. So in other words, what he's saying is, he says this, I'm kind of like picking and choosing out of Isaiah here. It says, they seek me day after day. They long to know my ways like a nation that wants to act with integrity and not ignore the law of God. They ask me for laws that are just. They long for God to draw near. Why should we fast if you never see it though? And do penance if you never notice? Look, you do business on your fast days. You oppress all your workmen. You quarrel and squabble when you fast and strike the poor man with your fist. Fasting like yours today will never make your voice heard on high. Is that the sort of fast that pleases me? A truly penitential day for men. So it's all, the whole thing about the sackcloth and ashes. So he goes on in Isaiah to say, your integrity will go before you and the glory of Yahweh behind you. Cry and Yahweh will answer. Call and he will say, I am here. If you do away with the yoke, the clenched fist, the wicked word, if you give your bread to the hungry and relief to the oppressed, your light will rise in the darkness and your shadows become like noon. Yahweh will always guide you, giving you relief in desert places. He will give strength to your bones, and you shall be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose waters never run dry. You will rebuild the ancient ruins, build upon the old foundation. You will be called breach mender, restore of ruined houses. Well, what about your own house? What about the house A that you are? You are a house, right? You house the Holy Spirit. What about the house of Smith, the house of whoever? Insert your name here. The house of Mary, the house of Ruth, the house of Joanne, the house of whoever. And what about the house that you came from? The house of anything. Put on a Scottish name, an Irish name, an Italian name, an Arabic name, whatever name. At the end of it, what if you can be the restorer of ruined houses? If you are the breach mender, but you can only be the breach mender and you can only restore the house if you restore your house first. It's all you can do. If you value who you are within and you do that now, I don't care if you're 35 years old. I don't care if you're 55 years old. I don't care if you're 95 years old or if you're 15 years old. Start now. Of course, the earlier you start, and I can say that because I didn't start early because I didn't know to start early. And so I'm telling you, wow, I could have, you know, it's one of those woulda, coulda, shoulda, but you look back and think, man, so often I held myself back because of my own low self-esteem. And many of you would look and say, what are you even talking about? But I did. So you don't know what your light is. You don't know what your potential is. You don't know how bright that shine can be when we're so busy putting a bushel basket over ourselves. So when you value yourself before, as soon as you can, begin today. Do it out of value of yourself. Don't do the sackcloth and ashes and repeat the old mantras, I'm bad, I'm bad, I'm bad, I'm bad. Begin to look at your valuable, your wonderful soul, the thing inside yourself, because it is love. It means becoming kind and compassionate to the you who was hurt, to the you that God showers himself on every day, and to the you in which he says, you know what? I love you. I love you so much. I am wishing you into creation. And all these things that you did and all these things that happened to you, there's only a few things you need to do is recognize them and try. But I am going to use you, O broken vessel, and shine. And in that shining, I am going to reach other people through the cracks in you. So let's have this Ash Wednesday be the day that we say, you know what? I am that broken vessel. I have the cracks. God is shining through me. It is time I learned to love myself. Because I can't love God fully, and I certainly can't love my neighbor fully if I don't love myself. So we'll leave you with that today. Please email me at dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. You can also text during our live programs, 573-4-BREAD-4. Until tomorrow, God bless you all. I am Dr. Michelle.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.